One of the great challenges we'll have today is absorbing all the information. One of the second challenges we'll have is getting through the information on time. So we'll do that very exactly. Thank you all for coming. My name is Glenn Pfeffer. I work here in the Bay Area, as I guess most of you do. Really proud to introduce Richard Braun. It's an honor for me because in 1985 he was one of my mentors in my hand training. I do hand and foot work now. Dick's an interloper coming up from Southern California. And the reason we got him into this report is sort of typified by this slide. Dick always said to me, well, I became an AME because I could see both sides of things always. But he's certainly able to come up with a very definitive answer, and I'd like to introduce him for this first talk.
Good morning. Glenn has given me about a minute and a half to talk with you about why I became an AME, and he insists that I stay on time, so I'll turn it over to the next speaker. the role of the AME is certainly changing in our workers' compensation law in the state of California, and it's very wise that the COA brings this program to you because we all have a lot to learn about this. I'd like to go over some of the things that Dr. Pfeffer asked me to do here. Why I became an AME is not terribly important. It's anecdotal. Herb Stark called me on the telephone about 30 years ago and said, Dick, you're becoming an independent medical evaluator. And I said, that's nice, Herb. Why am I doing that? He said, because I'm tired of listening to all that lying. That's why. And what he was saying really was that he was tired of seeing reports, which he had to then adjudicate, between the applicant reports that would say that the applicant was totally disabled and the defense reports, which said that the applicant was not disabled at all. And so he asked me to start writing these reports from a sort of middle ground where I would see both sides of the story and write a report. And so I got into that habit and became an AME as our laws change. The most important subject here, however, is why I remain and why I would like you to remain AMEs and involved in the AME process. And I'm going to go over that with you because the real question here is to be or not to be. And if we're not, he is. And this is the senior editor of the ACOEM guidelines that you're looking at right there. So what does an AME do? Well, he examines a patient, he reviews records, and he generates an AME report. Is the AME report more important than anything in the world? Yes, it's more important than the AME or the patient or anything, because on that report, important decisions are made. And these are the issues that the report may involve. It may involve all or some of these. It may determine entry into the system with an AOE-COE decision. It may involve treatment programs that we are trying to carry out, and it may involve whether or not the system is now coming to a close and the permanent and stationary evaluation and disability should be considered. So the AME report stands in the focal point, right in the eye of the storm, entry into the system, treatment when you're in the system, and decision-making when you leave the system. That's why it's important. Okay? Now, these are the issues that we would like to address in the AME area. Are we doing it because we want to augment our income? Are we doing it because we want to fill an open slot in our schedules? Are we doing it because we love to be authority figures? Authority figures are all over. They just love to tell you what to do. The other day, one of them told me to do a thoracic outlet case. I could remove the first rib, but don't touch the scalene muscles. I thought that was pretty smart. I'm trying to figure out how to do that. Or we can just be frustrated with the treatment process. Okay, these are reasons. But let me try to get you to a slightly higher plane for doing an AME report and evaluation. This is a little anecdote. It'll take a couple of minutes. But the man on the street reporter was interviewing three stonemasons building a cathedral. In the first workstation, he saw a sloppy job being done. The gentleman was obviously unhappy with his work. The stones were not well placed. And he asked him, tell me about your job. And he said, I hate my job. I get up at 5 in the morning. I work all day. Nobody cares. I have to do my job. I carry thousands of pounds of stone. I need the money. I do my job. He went to the second workstation, where he saw the bricks being laid out in a reasonable fashion. The man was working diligently away, and he asked him, how do you like your job? And he said, well, it's a job like any other job. I get up at 7 in the morning. I start work at 8 in the morning. I go home at 4 in the afternoon. It pays the rent. I'll take it. He went to the third workstation, and the gentleman there was laying the bricks in a meticulous pattern with great precision, and he was actually whistling a little tune and dancing around as he laid the stones in order. And the man on the street reporter asked him, sir, tell me about your job. He says, I love my job. He said, you do? Why do you love your job? He said, because I'm helping to build a great cathedral. So the attitude that we take toward our work is going to determine the quality of the work that we do. So these are reasons to consider doing a good job. A good AME report facilitates good medical care, expedites solution of a dispute, and allows a medically driven legal system to function. No AME reports, no good reports. This system doesn't function very well. So it's extremely important. Okay. So what does a good AME require? It has to address substantive evidence for each position. You've got to look at this very carefully. It must reach reasonable conclusions, and it must allow the attorneys to settle the case. You're in there to help people do a job. Their job is settling the issue or settling the case. Okay? Now, some of us have never left the pre-med mentality. You know, get ahead at all costs. Game the system as soon as it comes out. Don't tell the truth. Just cut the baby in half. I would ask you not to do that. Take the high road. Write an ethical report that allows the attorneys to settle the case. If you write it, they will come. Okay? Why do I remain in AME? Well, I like some of the things that it requires. It requires me to carry out a reasonable decision-making process. Glenn, can you help me with that? Yeah. A reasonable decision-making process. I've got to review the facts. I've got to review them carefully. It is important. I think all of us as orthopedic surgeons really like to do things that are important. I wouldn't function very well as a cosmetic dermatologist in La Jolla. I don't know or care about the difference between a zits and a freckle. But when you're dealing with people entering the system and leaving the system, it's extremely important to get it right. You know what Billy Joel said, get it right the first time, that's the main thing. Get it right the next time, ain't the same thing.
Is it?
So it's important. Okay? Now, how to market yourself as an AME, and this will take just about one more minute. Again, if you write a good report, they will come. Many years ago, Dr. Boyce said to me, how to start a successful hand surgery practice, do one good case. 10 years later or so, Herb Stark said to me, do one good report. I will add two other caveats that I think are important. One, don't create disputes if they don't exist. If the issue is settled already, then attend to that issue. Don't show us how smart you are. And the next is, if you do disagree, say so and state your reasons. And here's the real reason that keeps me in the business of being an AME. I truly believe this, and I hope that all of you believe this, that the orthopedic community must remain the force behind evidence-based medicine. If we don't, who will? And if we do reports and do them well and do our job seriously, then actually the force will be with us. Thanks a lot.
All right. Dick, thank you very much. Lift the force. Andrew Suhoy, are you here? Andrew could just stand up. Andrew and I are the co-moderators for this course. He's been working largely on the Southern California aspect, and I on the Northern California, for those of you who don't know him. Our next speaker is Ty Azonian from, where are you from, Ty? Tarzana?
Tarzana.
Ty's going to talk on the financial implications of being an AME, which is no small issue. For many of us who, go ahead. That's not it? For many, why don't you get yourself there? For many of us who remain treating physicians, it's not that obvious to me that doing an AME report is cost effective, given what it also given our financial obligation to a staff of X-ray techs and CAS techs. So Ty was asked to look into this. Ty is a very important guy in the United States. He's a member of the RUC, which is the AMA committee that looks exactly at the which is looking at what it costs us to run, how Medicare charges us for the office-based aspect of our practice. So he's very familiar with these types of numbers. Thank you, Ty.
Thank you, Glenn. So the question is it worth it? In your practice, you have a variety of payer options. You have a variety of payer options, and I've kind of listed out my perspective on where I see them falling. And I've ranked them from lowest to highest as I see them. Now, one of the things you want to look at is your net profit. Net profit equals your collections minus your expenses, and your goal is to increase your net profit. That can be done by either increasing your collections, decreasing your expenses, or both, or more appropriately, using your resources more efficiently. You do need to look at practice expense, and there's two parts of practice expense. There's a direct practice expense, which are expenses that can be related directly to the service. And what's included here is primarily your front office staff that checks the patient in, the nurse that takes the patient back to the room, gets the vital signs, does the initial intake, the supplies that you use when you see the patient, supplies that you might apply, gowns that you give the patient, the paper that goes on the table. Indirect expenses are things like your rent. Administrative expenses are considered indirect, as is scheduling, billing, and transcription, and you might not agree with all of that. However, what happens is that when you do work in your office, you have a higher direct practice expense, and when you do work outside of your office, your direct practice expense is lower. Now, when you do surgery, you see patients in the hospital, make rounds, emergency room call, you do have office expenses. Your staff is in your office. But the work that you're doing, that they are doing, is not directly related to the service that you're rendering. They are doing work for patients that you either saw before or you'll be seeing in the future. And AME work, a large volume of this, is going to be review of records, which you can do outside of your office when your direct practice expense is lower. And you might argue with the wisdom of where I've listed you can do this, but I'll tell you it can make your life very productive. Yesterday I left my office at 12. Spent an hour on the freeway, and I couldn't make any money. And with the exception of that hour, the 2 hours I spent at the airport, as well as the time I spent on the airplane and last night in the hotel room, I was productive from a financial standpoint. So when you look at the time that you spend doing AME work, you need to consider the time that you as a doctor put in, as well as your staff time. And if you can transfer some of that work outside of the office, you'll have a lower practice expense and higher potential profit. Now, missed appointments can be very expensive. This is not going to happen as much with AMEs, but I can tell you it happens commonly with QMEs. The appointment is scheduled, but the patient no-shows. What happens sometimes with AMEs is with short notice they will cancel the appointment or reschedule it more appropriately. This is very expensive to your office because you've allocated time for that patient. What we do is we confirm in writing with the carrier that in the event that the patient no-shows or they cancel it with short notice, that we will charge them and they will pay. What happens if you're doing QME work, especially if you're doing defense QME work, is that when the patient no-shows, the carrier utilizes that in defense of their claim. So when you get paid for that, you change what would be a money-losing opportunity into a money-making opportunity. These are the codes that you're going to use predominantly for billing of your AME work. There's four codes. This is 25% higher than the fee for the QME. These are the modifiers that you'll use. The 9-4 modifier goes on all your AMEs. It increases the QME fee by 25%. That's what I listed on the prior slide. It's in your handout. Your handout is exactly like this talk is. If you use an interpreter, it's supposed to take increased time, and you increase the QME fee, you add the two together, and it's an increase of 35%. If you've previously seen the patient and you're asked to reevaluate them, you do an ML 101. You bill this in 15-minute increments or portion thereof for face-to-face time with the injured worker, review of records, and preparation of the report. And the key here is or portion thereof, and we'll come back to that in a little bit. ML 102 is the evaluation that I bill most commonly. That requires 20 minutes face-to-face time with the patient, which is, I think, a reasonable allocation to obtain the information and examination that you need. You obviously have significant additional documentation time. The ML 103 can be derived at by a variety of different options. The three that I use most commonly to get to an ML 103 is to address the issue of causation, apportionment, and spending over 2 hours in records review. Now, if you look at that, this is 2 hours records review over the 102, which really means that you're getting paid $125 an hour for those 2 hours of records review. There's other ways that you can do this. The ML 104 is a code that I bill quite commonly, and it's really the gravy in the AME system. This is a complex medical legal evaluation involving extraordinary circumstances. You use this for doing depositions. If you're reviewing records for a deposition, you can utilize it there. This, when you're asked to review additional records after you evaluate the patient, you utilize this code. and it's billed in 15-minute increments or portion thereof for records review and preparation of the report, which would include editing the report. That means that if you spend 18 minutes reviewing records, that is 2 units. Now, let's just look at a comparison. I've talked to you about the fact that your office-based practice expenses are more expensive. Let's look at the time that you spend with a patient in your office. A level 3 follow-up visit may require 15 minutes face-to-face time with the patient. A level 4 visit would be 25 minutes. An ML 102 or 103 requires 20 minutes face-to-face time. Certainly, the AME work is going to involve more records review, and it's going to have substantially more documentation time. But the really expensive part of providing that service is when the patient is in your office. Compare the reimbursement for those 4 codes. Let's look at your options for doing work outside of the option. I put a happiness scale there. That's my happiness scale. Yours may be the same or it may be different, but let's look at how the options work out. Emergency room call, you need to be available. You're called to the ER. You show up, you evaluate the patient. They have an open fracture, and you need to take them to surgery. So you schedule the OR, and you go home, and you wait, and you wait. And they call you and say, doctor, we called for your patient. You need to be here right away. And you show up, and you still wait. Takes you all day, and then you wait to get paid. Well, there's pros and cons to everything in life. This is certainly a service to society. Using the socially correct term, your partner is frustrated. Your kid's soccer game you can't go see. You have high liability. You get to take care of the patient for 90 days, and you probably don't get paid. Surgery, it's fun. It's what we're trained to do. But look at the package. You see the patient for a preoperative evaluation, the day of the surgery. You wait. You do the pre-surgery. Then you take care of them for 90 days. Every time they call and complain, you call them back, and you take care of them. I don't know about the procedures you do, but it's not uncommon for me to get paid less than $500 for doing a procedure that takes over an hour of my time at the surgery center or hospital. AME work is done on a piecemeal basis. Every time they ask you another question, send you another piece of paper, you get to bill for that time. The bill for records review, 15-minute increments or portion thereof. 18 minutes is 2 units. The bill for preparation of the report. And the payment is guaranteed in 45 working days. Now, I don't know exactly what that means. Maybe Judge Faust can tell us. Previously, it was calendar days, 60 calendar days. The intent was to reduce it, and they changed it from calendar days to working days, decreasing the amount. And their intent was to get you paid sooner, which hasn't really happened. As far as I'm concerned, I work weekends, so 45 calendar days and 45 working days are really not that different. What are the advantages of doing AME work? You can choose the time. Your family activities aren't interrupted. You have no wasted hours. There's no global period, which is a big advantage. Cons, I'm still thinking. So is it worth it? In my opinion, the answer is yes. Thanks for your patience. I'm here today. If you have questions, you can email me. Make sure your email has some sort of notation that it relates to this conference, because if I don't know you and I don't know what it's about, it goes in the trash. Thank you.
Right. Well, I think that was a great talk. Let's have some questions on these first two speakers. I'm sure there are some in the audience. Yes. And you guys have a mic here. All right.
Could you just define what you consider to be complexity factors?
Ty?
I don't usually use the complexity factors. I use the 3 that I listed there because those are the easiest to meet. You can usually address the issue of causation. That's oftentimes in the letter. You can address the issue of apportionment because that's in the letter. And if you spend over 2 hours. The way I typically do it is what we tell the carrier is that the records will be reviewed and documented as a report, ML 104, and when we see the patient, we typically do that as an ML 102. So I actually rarely use the ML 103. Other people like to bill the exam under ML 104. They do the whole thing at one time with the examination and the report. I find from a practice management standpoint that that's more difficult because I like to review the records ahead of time and get it off my desk.
I want to make sure I saw that slide right. The AME rate for the ML 104 is $250 an hour, and that includes the 35% extra on a QME rate. Is that correct?
No. The AME rate is 25% more than the QME rate. The QME rate for the ML-104 is $50 per one quarter hour. So it's $62.50 per one quarter hour, or it's $250 per hour, but it's billed in quarter hour increments.
For the AME rate.
For the AME rate.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
How many hours of record review, Ty, do you consider appropriate for an ML-102?
It's listed as less than 2 hours less for the ML-102. The way we bill it, though, is we bill it separately, and we tell them that ahead of time.
So if somebody has 6 hours of record review and you spend 30 minutes with them or 20 minutes with them face-to-face, how would you bill that?
The way we do that is we tell the carrier that we'll bill the records as an ML-104. They're reviewed before we see the patient. So we would bill whatever. I didn't know how many. Did you say 6 hours?
6 hours. That wouldn't be enough to move it to an ML-104 for you, or would it?
It would. You could bill that as you could bill it as one encounter ML-104 for the time you see the patient, the time you review the records, and the time to prepare the report.
I'm just curious from the group here. 20 minutes with the patient, 25 minutes, good solid quality time, 5 hours of record review. How many people will bill that as an ML-104? And how many people just would bill it as something else? ML-102, 103. Okay, so unless you're billing it at we can get into that later, how records are reviewed. But they are, you know, a box of records can take 5 hours to review. It's a question exactly who does it. But you'll have to get up to the mic, sir. Yes, sir.
Can you clarify a little bit the difference between when you bill for an ML-101 versus an 104 for a supplemental report? In other words, is the 104 supplemental report charge only after you've given a deposition or only after you've done an agreed medical evaluation or any time you've done a QME? And if it's when do you bill 101 versus 104 for a supplemental?
Yeah. The ML-101 requires a face-to-face contact with the injured worker. There's debate here between Judge Faust and myself. I think it's 9 months. She thinks it's a year after you've seen the patient. But it requires 101 requires a face-to-face contact with the patient. And, again, that's quarter-hour increments.
The year, Ty, is for what? What's the debate?
Since you evaluated the injured worker.
Diana's going to give her. She brought the labor code, and she'll bring it up.
Yeah,
and
okay.
Look it up.
Good.
The 104 does not require a face-to-face contact.
You have to step up to the mic, sir, please. Or else we can hand you the mic. Here, let me have that. Next, please.
Dr. Brown, a question which is fairly qualitative. You said here must address the substantive evidence of each position. The key word there is substantive. Are we going to get into that a little bit more today, what is substantive from each side? Because a lot of it's a lot of, you know, fluff.
Yeah, what I really wanted to say was that in looking at some of the reports that I see, particularly biased QME reports, we get into a lot of diatribe, we get into a lot of rhetoric, we get into a lot of flailing around. And I don't know, I never sat on a panel to evaluate first-year law students, although two of my kids have gone through that. And we really want to get rid of that kind of language, and we want to get down to what are the facts, because that's where the reports are going to come from. You know, you're not on a soapbox creating some great political effort. The lawyers really want to get down to what are the issues here and what can we do with them. And so substantive can be obviously evaluated by either party as being meaningful or not meaningful, but the rhetoric, I think, can go away. And I think that that's something that Dr. Boies taught me, at least, with a red pencil.
Dr. Baer?
Is there going to be a new way of choosing the AMEs with the computer in the panel? And in the past, I don't believe the AMEs had to be QMEs. Is there a change in that, or am I correct? Incorrect.
We'll need the mic. Dick, can you pass that along? Any answer to that, Ty, that specific question? Take the mic. And let's just get one more question.
I don't know that that's the topic of this talk, but my understanding is to be an AME, you do not have to be certified as a QME. You just have to be mutually agreeable to both parties.
That's correct, which is a real appeal for a lot of us here, or many of you here who don't do QMEs. An AME could be anyone who's picked. Let's just take the last question.
Dr. Braun, will the word malinger exist in the new AME system?
I have no idea, but I haven't used it ever. So I don't really know. I'm not an expert on the use of that word because I've never used it. It's too loaded.
But you will state that the objective findings don't correlate with the subjective complaints, right?
Yes, and I'll also say that I think that the person being examined amplifies their symptoms. And sometimes if we give them a nerve block and they still have pain, I might say that there does not appear to be any objective evidence for the symptoms that are being described by the patient, particularly if you've got a nerve block and they're paralyzed.
All right. Well, those are very informative sessions for me. Let's go on. I'm very honored to have Michael Marks join us. Many of you who have done this type of work before know the great law firm in the state of Finnegan, Marks, Hampton, and Theophile. And I think that second name, Marks, is yours, I guess, right? And Michael's going to give us an outline on what's overall changed in the 2000 reforms affecting QMEs. And the subtitle is sort of, it's no longer defense versus applicant.